Hello, everybody. Josh Brown here, back for another great episode on Franchise Euphoria. Well, today's episode is brought to you by IndieFranchiseLaw.com, a leading resource in the franchise space to help you if you're considering buying a franchise, turning your business into a franchise, or growing your business through a licensing or franchise structure. So go on, check it out, IndieFranchiseLaw.com. I think you'll find a lot of valuable and free information as you continue to kind of weigh franchising and licensing and the growth of your business. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Today, I'm thrilled to have on Michael Muhammad of Chronic Tacos. Michael is the Chief Executive Officer and President at Chronic Tacos Enterprises Incorporated, where he oversees the strategic vision of the fast casual Mexican restaurant brand. Originally from Vancouver, Canada, Michael attended St. Martin's University in Washington State, where he earned a Bachelor's of Business Administration and a Master's of Business Administration. Michael and his three brothers first became affiliated with Chronic Tacos in 2010 when they helped finance the chain's expansion into Canada. After seeing the potential that the brand had for growth, they decided to take over the entire franchise in 2012 and haven't looked back since. Chronic Tacos isn't just a fast casual chain. It's a lifestyle brand and prides itself on that. They combine authentic Mexican food with a flair from their Southern California roots to create a unique dining experience. They celebrate individuality of their customers with a complete customizable menu, and they try to celebrate the authenticity of their food through their high-quality ingredients laid out in front of their guests. Really enjoyed this conversation with Michael, talking about his foray into the restaurant business along with his brothers, what they've learned along the way, how they're dealing with COVID-19, and a whole variety of other issues. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this interview with Michael Muhammad. Hello, Michael. Welcome to Franchise Euphoria. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. Obviously, in the midst of COVID-19 and all the craziness and uncertainty going on in this world, which I, you know, we'll certainly talk about as it relates to the Chronic Tacos franchise. But before we dive into that, tell me a little bit about your background, how you got involved with Chronic Tacos, your background experience, and how you kind of merged with the brand.
Sure. I've been with the brand since 2012. The brand itself has been around since 2002. We opened our first restaurant in 2002 in Newport Beach, California. It was founded by a couple of friends, Randy Weiner and Dan Biello, who are still involved in different aspects of the company. Randy's still involved in the corporate side, and Dan still has a couple of restaurants in the system. We got involved in 2012, and I say we, my brothers and I, Dan and Dave and Joey. We've connected with Chronic Tacos when we were living in Vancouver. So I'm originally from Vancouver, Canada, and I still have my family, my mom and brother, two of my brothers still up there. And at the time, they were expanding into Canada, and we knew the franchisee who was expanding into Canada with the Canadian rights. We were at the time doing different real estate developments and also investing in private companies, doing, you know, small private equity investments. And we helped finance their first couple of restaurants. And through that, I met Randy. Randy was still involved with the business, and they had another partnership at the time. And, you know, getting to know Randy, we seemed to click pretty well. We'd stay in contact over the business and discuss where they were going. And it was probably a year and a half later. So that was in 2010. And it was probably in late 2011 that Randy had approached me about us getting involved and acquiring control of Chronic Tacos, partnering up with them and, you know, taking it to the next level. You know, at the time I talked to Randy about growth and where Chronic Tacos was at. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of infrastructure in place. You know, there wasn't really a platform for growth and, you know, there wasn't really a lot of strategy in place. So we got involved in beginning of 2012 was when we took over. At that time, I moved down to Orange County with my family. And from there, we've continued to grow.
So it's interesting because, you know, and obviously you're in various parts throughout the United States, but you're also in Japan and Canada. And so obviously, you know, the platform that you've helped put in place has worked, or, you know, appears like it has worked. I'm curious because it's such an important question for franchise systems. I mean, it's one I hear all the time, probably one that you've asked yourself before you got involved. And that is, you know, how do you take this concept that was having some success, was growing organically, and then how do you put it into a position from where it can grow beyond the comforts of the local region where it started? I mean, what about your background or your abilities? Were you able to help do that along with your brothers, you know, coming in?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we first got involved with Chronic Tacos, there was about 27 locations. And a lot of the manuals, the operations, it was really in the founders' heads. They would go and train the restaurants, they'd open the restaurants. And so you don't have an ability to really leverage that into growth when everything's in one person's head. So we took time to really just stop franchising. So in 2012, we completely put a hold and we closed the deal. We put a hold on franchising. We opened up new restaurants that were corporate restaurants. And we utilized that time to really fine-tune first the build-out, the design, the equipment package. So my brother Dan really spent a lot of time on building that package out. Then at the same time, we really worked on the branding and marketing side. That's an area that my brothers, Dave and Joey, got quite heavily involved in. And we really needed to take, you know, and say, well, here's the brand. And like you said, it's had a lot of its success organically. But what about the brand that makes it special? I mean, we love the food. It's a unique brand. It's, you know, involvement with art and music and action sports. And so we needed to take that and really get more concise with who we were as a brand. And then from there, you know, taking our operations and really fine-tuning that, you know, redoing our manual, creating training manuals and guidelines and, you know, changing our whole franchise agreement in order to be more operational friendly and something that you could scale and grow with.
Well, I mean, does that involve cutting back on some of your offerings? And I find this with a lot of franchise systems. You know, they had 27, you come along, they're opening with obviously the founder out there training everybody, not exactly all the types or the, you know, written materials that you would need. I often find, I'm just curious your experience is, you know, when you go to actually putting pen to paper and really putting down these operational principles and standards, what happens is you really get a good chance at that point to take a real deep dive look at the business. And you get a chance to say, you know, we started off doing this and then somehow we've expanded to add all these different things. Is that part of what we do? Or is this a good time to really focus back on our top sellers plus a few other things? I mean, obviously always trying to innovate and add things and tweak things, but I'm just curious your experience with that. Was it a time that you had to take a look as you were adding these corporate locations to then say, well, maybe we aren't going to serve, you know, these three items that we've been trying to sell for the last 6 months and haven't gone too well? Or, you know, was there that kind of analysis that went into this?
Yeah, absolutely. We had to make tough decisions in the beginning. I mean, first to just not sell franchises and to really,
yeah, that's a real tough decision. That really is. I give you props for that. Yeah.
Yeah. We felt that the long-term growth and strength of our brand was going to be, we needed to focus on the platform to build from. And so we did, we looked at our menu. I'm a numbers guy. You know, I have a background in finance. So we spend a lot of time just looking at our sales, looking at the product mix, looking at our costs, looking at what items are profitable, what items are not, you know, just because you can get caught up in thinking, well, this is a great item. But if you're not moving it and you have to inventory it in the back and it actually takes longer to prepare, all of those things factor into that. And what I think most businesses find when you make some changes, sometimes you overshoot. Sometimes you go a little too far and you say, well, you know what? Maybe we've made a few too many changes and we've gotten away from who we are. And there's somewhere in the middle is the core of who you are as a business and who you are as a brand. And you know, we needed to obviously eliminate some things. We needed to focus on our marketing and our brand presence and who we were, and looking at our build outs and what can we scale and what, you know, looking at our design and saying, well, that really works in California. Is that going to work in Georgia or Florida or Arizona for that matter? And so in doing that, you know, sometimes you eliminate things, sometimes you, I think in some ways, maybe we got a little too conservative and we had to back that off in recent years. And I think get back to our roots and being a more edgy and, you know, more out there brand.
How did the franchisees react? I mean, how did those franchisees who were part of the original 27 or you know, I don't know if you had any corporate locations at that time, but, it, you know, if there's some subset of that that was corporate, but the franchisees that were a part of the original one, when you come to them and say, hey, guys, we're going to put a pause on this. You got to buy into there's a reasoning we're putting a pause on this so that you can grow better in the future. I mean, how did they react to that?
You know, for the most part, we had a lot of support on that. I think that you had a group of franchisees who really wanted more support in a sense of just more direction from the brand. And, you know, they're, you know, franchisees by nature are entrepreneurial and they're getting in this to run their own business. And but at the same time, they're buying a franchise because of the guidelines, the brand presence and the direction you're going. So you need to provide a lot of those things. And I think that, you know, the more I think sophisticated operators really understood that this in the long term was better for them and that, you know, they didn't want us just stretching ourselves. I think they believed in not having us stretch ourselves thin without, you know, the proper foundation in place. And, you know, we did have some franchisees that didn't want to come along with the change, and eventually they get worked out of the system and you move forward with franchisees that have a common goal.
Yeah. And I mean, as you go through this process and, you know, you get through it, you guys fine tune things, and now you're ready to relaunch. What, did you start relaunching franchising, what, in 2013 or 14?
2015. So in 2014, we started to build our strategy around that and looking at, you know, who do we feel is the right fit for us? You know, you take a look at the franchisees you have and who are the best performers and what is that personality. Now, there's several personalities that make up a great performer. So we wanted to understand what, you know, kind of the guidelines for us and what we're looking for in a partner, because what was so important to us was, you know, not just experience, but do they get the brand? Do they understand who we are as a brand and what we're about, and understand that, you know, we're going to be a bit irreverent and we're going to really, you know, and obviously so much of importance is put on our food. And so when we're going out and approaching that, we wanted to have those things really firm and a strategy for growth. And so we built that over, you know, 2014, once we really felt strong with our tools and processes. And then we started expanding again in 2015. And since 2015, you know, we've expanded to 60 locations.
Wow, that's great. I mean, talk to me about, and I guess probably the best way to do this, since we're obviously an audio podcast, but people can go to the website and see, but I'm always curious, and you mentioned about an edgy and an irreverent and sort of, you know, that's a part of the brand. Walk me through, if I'm never been into a Chronic Tacos, which I haven't been, what can I expect? I mean, when I walk in, I mean, from the look of it, the feel of it, the food that I'm going to get, how it's served. I mean, walk me through what that experience is like.
You know, we're a California inspired brand. You know, and in California, you have taquerias everywhere, and, you know, you'll have, and that's where you're going to get the most authentic Mexican food. And so we wanted to take that concept of the authentic Mexican food. And we, you know, our recipes are based on third generation recipes. So you're getting a real authentic flavor, but we wanted something that was a little bit more upbeat and had that Southern California vibe. Our music is curated internally with a mix of reggae and punk and, you know, that SoCal feel. And then, you know, we really took a lot of time in designing our art. So in our restaurants, you'll see that we've worked with a local street artist who's known for his graffiti work, and he has done unique murals for us, and they're based on, you know, that day of, it was kind of a take on Day of the Dead art. So you know the Day of the Dead, which got really trendy, and we wanted to make sure that we were kind of staying ahead of that, and so we brought in a street artist who kind of gives it a little bit more edge.
And then it's a fast casual, right? So people are coming in, they're ordering at the counter, and then is the food being brought out to them? They're getting their food, they're sitting down.
Everything's customized. So it's very much the inlines where you walk the line, you choose what entree you want, and we build it for you custom to how you want it. So by the time you hit the register, you're paying for it and taking your food with you.
And it's freshly made right then and there, you know, before you.
Yeah. Yeah. So everything, you know, our proteins are made throughout the day. Every morning we're making our guac fresh, our salsas fresh. All our produce is prepared fresh in the back. So everything's made fresh throughout the day. Our beans and rice are made from scratch. So nothing's brought in packaged. It's a very traditional style.
What's it been like for you to get into the restaurant business?
You know, it's been interesting. We got into it, you know, a few years after 2008. So there was, you know, we were just coming out of
things going on there.
Yeah. You know, we were just coming out of the recession there. And I think that was, you know, it was an opportunity for growth. And, you know, we brought in a team of expertise as well in the restaurant business because we're more on the business side. And it's been great. We love it. It's a fun industry to be in. It's a challenging industry, and it's especially challenging right now, but it's also a fun industry. I mean, you get to put smiles on people's faces. You get to be creative. We get to be involved in the music scene at times through different events and sporting events. So with a brand like ours and the reach, we get to do a lot of cool things. I mean, you know, one of our partners is Wee Man from the Jackass movies, he brings a lot of creativity to our team as well. And, you know, we have a lot of fun.
What's your favorite thing on the menu?
You know, I've always been just, you know, I would get a bowl with carne asada, and it's interesting. I didn't have our al pastor a lot. And then in the last year or so, I've really been trying it more. Our founder, Randy, that was always one of his favorite things. And I was always more traditionally sticking to the carne asada and the chicken, but I would say in the last 2 years, it's been the al pastor. So I love our al pastor, whether it's in a taco or in a bowl. It's a traditional sweet and spicy. You don't get that at a lot of fast casual chains. I think it's a fairly unique item for our menu.
You're making me hungry. You know, I mean, unlike you, I'm in Indiana. There's not exact taco places on every corner. So it sounds great. Tell me, I mean, you mentioned this, and I'd love for you to speak to it because, you know, we're in the midst of COVID-19. We're in the midst of a pandemic of circumstances that are unprecedented and really uncertainty rules the day right now with all sorts of businesses and people. And what have you guys, or what are you in the midst of focusing on trying to figure out as we work through this pandemic, see what happens, not just on the other side, but I have a feeling, you know, obviously things are going to open up, but they're going to open up slowly. Restaurants are being probably disproportionately affected because once they open up, there's still all these issues around how do you have people in a kitchen who are social distancing? How do you have people in a restaurant who are social distancing? I mean, what are you guys doing for your system right now, both in the emergency phase, but also in the planning phase? Because it's probably going to yet be at some point another opportunity, because there's going to unfortunately be a whole lot of places that don't survive this. So what are you guys doing to prepare for those things?
Yeah, it's certainly been a challenging time for restaurants, and probably one of the most challenging times I would say anybody on our team and our franchise system has ever seen. And, you know, I'm really proud of our team. They've really stepped up. Obviously, we've had to be working from home and working remotely. And I think that that's really forced us to get focused in on what's really important and what's working. And you get down to, I think, the essential pieces. And for us, you know, right out of the gates, you go into a bit of a crisis mode in the sense of making sure our franchisees are aware of all the different protocols, the safety protocols, making sure they're aware of everything that's going to be or is available through the government stimulus package, working with our third-party providers, making sure that everybody's active on our app and our online ordering. I think we were a bit of ahead of the game a bit in the sense that we could see these things coming. Even when they hadn't completely shut restaurants down, we were preparing for it. And I think that right now, you know, we've seen obviously increases in the use of online tools and takeout. And within our restaurant, we've had to make adjustments to make sure that our customers feel safe and that we have proper social distancing protocols, that we provide our workers with all the safety tools that they need, masks, gloves. We've started installing plexiglass at the cash register in order to provide that comfort for our customers and our employees. You know, we are checking our employees' temperatures. We're doing everything we can in order to provide a safe environment. And we know that this is going to take time to get back to normal. And in fact, it's going to be a new normal. And so when we're looking going forward, you know, how is that going to change the ordering process? How is that going to change the layout of our restaurants? You know, we've seen obviously a significant decrease in foot traffic and in sales, and not in every restaurant, but in certainly in many of them. And so we're preparing now as we feel like we're starting to come out of the worst of it, or at least we hope so. And we're starting to see some states open up, and knowing that other states will open up over the next 4 to 6 weeks, and what's that going to look like? And so we're taking steps to make sure that we've built protocols. We'll be sending out new protocols to all our franchisees for the opening and understanding the rules in the different regions and what they're allowing and what they're not allowing.
And are you looking to expand still across the country? I mean, are you looking everywhere throughout the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, we're a franchise system. We're going to continue to grow. We still have restaurants in construction now. It's obviously been challenging. We have new restaurants planning to open, and you know, we will see restaurants close. I mean, I think every system's not going to be immune to some fallout from this, but You know, we're preparing ourselves to continue to grow. We just have to take a look at our system and make sure that we are set up for the new norm, and that, you know, we anticipate seeing more online ordering. We anticipate seeing more third-party delivery. We don't see that continuing to drop. And in fact, you know, we've seen such an increase that we will want to build on that as a business.
Well, it's interesting because even before COVID-19, I mean, I was seeing it with some of my restaurant clients, and, you know, you'd see it where they have a beautiful restaurant and, you know, yes, there's a segment of folks that would go to it and it's a sit down place, but they'd also have sort of this carry out part of the restaurant where it would just be for carry out. And the percentages of people just going to get the carry out just continue to rise, you know, to a point where it's sort of like you really got to look at the whole makeup of your restaurant and how much you're spending on the build out and how much sit down space you have versus, as you said, people coming in and carrying out or delivery. I have one of my last questions I have for you, which, you know, I'm not sure if you have an answer to this or not, but it's just something I've been thinking about. Yeah, to me, you hear a lot in the restaurant space about, obviously, delivery is huge. And I think consumers have really forced that on restaurants. Some restaurants that really haven't really wanted to get into that game because if they do it themselves, it's expensive. It's unpredictable. Sometimes the food doesn't travel well. I mean, you have those sorts of issues. But then you're forced into it with some of these third-party companies, you know, Grubhub and some of the others. I sort of think that there's going to be at some point, whether it's a system, an app, a software, something that's going to allow the restaurants like yourself and others to do the delivery yourselves, but in a way that's a little bit different. So that, because one of the things I keep hearing from a lot of my clients is that, you know, they're forced to use Grubhub and these third-party apps, but it kills their profitability. They take a lot of the sale and they can't control the delivery as much as they can because it's through a third party. And, you know, it's another, if something gets screwed up, you know, that's a touching point with a customer that if it doesn't go well, that reflects bad on your brand. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
It is true. I mean, working with the third-party deliveries, it does open up initially, you know, and that was our concern if you go back a few years ago when we started to see these third-party deliveries come on, and they kind of pitched them as additional sales. It's you've already got your costs in place, and this is just additional sales. But we anticipated at some point that was going to be cannibalistic to your sales, and knowing that, you have to make adjustments. I don't think that these third-party companies are going to go anywhere. I think that that is a behavioral piece of our consumers that's not going to change. It's how do we work together, because they don't survive without the restaurants, and we are going to need them going forward. And there's going to be we're going to have to find that middle ground where restaurants are able to be profitable and they're able to be profitable, and the consumers are able to get what they want out of it. And you know, I mean, I've read the statistics as far as how many restaurants would probably close or anticipated potentially 20% of all restaurants could permanently close. And that's going to have an effect on all the support businesses to the restaurant industry. And I think that it shows you how much each entity is going to need each other. And so we've got to find a way moving forward in fixing the model so that restaurants can be profitable at it as well. Because if 30, 40, 50% plus of their sales are going to be through these third-party apps, then, you know, that's a significant portion of their sales. And if they are being charged 20, 30% on top of that, that completely eats away at a lot of the margin. I mean, restaurants are low margin, high volume, and every penny counts.
Well, thank you for coming on, Michael. It's been a pleasure to learn about you and your story, and certainly, you know, wish you and Chronic Tacos the best as you work through COVID-19 issues into the future. Sounds like you got a good team in place. If anybody wants to learn more about Chronic Tacos, you can go to eatchronictacos.com. You can also find them on Twitter at @eatchronictacos. And through other social media sites, including Facebook and others, by just searching Eat Chronic Tacos. Thank you once again, Michael. Really some good insight into how you guys operate and how you are growing. And I will say, I think you've done it in a smart way. It takes a lot of intentionality and really a belief in what you're doing to pause franchising. Most places don't do that. So I give you a lot of credit for doing that and thinking big picture. And it sounds like it's paying off, and I have all the confidence and certainly hope that you guys work through, obviously, these unprecedented times and be all the stronger for it. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed the podcast in general, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes and leave me a rating and review. It really helps to get this podcast out to more and more people. So the easy way to do it is go to iTunes and in the search box, put in Franchise Euphoria. You will then see my cover art, and you click on my smiling face that says Franchise Euphoria, and then click on the link that says ratings and reviews. It's that simple, but boy, oh boy, does it mean the world to me when people leave ratings and reviews. And like I said, it really helps get the show out there. Once again, would love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of the show. And until the next time, happy franchising.